The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs look unstoppable. I mean, that first quarter won the game. That's all they really had to do. Tyreek Hill, 3 touchdown catches and 269 yards receiving and 13 receptions. And you can't put one guy on Tyreek Hill, the fastest land mammal. He's, by the way, anyone who didn't have him in DraftKings lost. 60 points. The problem is, Raj, our whole league had Tyreek Hill. Just canceled out.
I looked at every single roster.
Was he on every roster?
And it's like our Thursday game when we did the Thanksgiving Day games. Everyone had Deshaun Watson. So just
right, of course. So it didn't matter. But, oh, it's something so juicy about seeing 60 points in a DraftKings game. Mahomes the best. Well, let's put it this way. Given the importance of the quarterback position, given the rules protecting and favoring quarterbacks nowadays, given their influence on wins and losses, Mahomes the best player who ever lived. Best football player who ever lived. I mean, is he as great an overall football player as like Walter Payton, or is he as dominant in his era as Johnny Unitas, or is he as great a quarterback as Jim Brown was a running back, or Jerry Rice, a wideout, or Lawrence Taylor, a linebacker, or Deion Sanders, a corner. I mean, he's in that category. But none of those dudes are quarterbacks in the modern game. And this dude is like Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers had a baby. He can thread the needle. He's totally cerebral. He's also rah-rah, gunslinger type. His teammates love him. He's big and strong. He can pick up yards with his legs. He calls his own number and delivers every time. He won MVP the first year he played. He threw 50 touchdowns. He improved his touchdown-to-interception ratio the second year he played and won Super Bowl MVP. And now in his third year, he's probably going to do both. I'll take the Chiefs against the field. Not odds on. I'll just take them as the favorites against the field, period. And I'll take Mahomes as the MVP of the regular season and the Super Bowl MVP. He has 30 touchdowns to 2 interceptions right now, and he's leading the league in yards. I mean, it's like, it's not even fair. You put a guy with that much talent on a roster this stacked with a great coach who's a quarterback whisperer. It's not even fair. Meantime, Cam comes through in the clutch. Patriots top the Arizona Cardinals. Let's keep in mind, Cam starts the year. They beat the Dolphins by 2 scores. Miami's good. They lose to Seattle because of a goal line stand. Seattle's very good. They beat the Raiders this last week, notwithstanding. Vegas has had a great season. The Raiders have had a great season, an excellent season so far, even though they got thumped by the Falcons. That was embarrassing. They had an emotional letdown. It's a trap game for them. They're not emotionally ready to take the next step yet. They get up for the Chiefs, and then the Falcons crush them. But Raiders are good this year. Beat the Raiders. Then Cam got COVID. All right, he got COVID. What happened? They were competitive with the Chiefs, but they lost. And also a call went against them. And then, seemingly in a brain fog, they got whooped in consecutive games by the Niners, who was the first game by. They got thumped. But in both cases, I looked and said, Cam doesn't look right to me. And guess what? Cam later on said, yeah, I wasn't feeling right after COVID. That's why Belichick went over to him and kind of gave him a pat, like, it's all right. Huh? Belichick's doing that after a guy screws up? Because he knew what Cam was dealing with. It seemed that way to me at the time. And then he barely loses to the Bills. Got stripped on a drive that would have won the game for the Patriots. And then they beat the Jets. And then they beat the Ravens. And yes, they lost to the Texans, but Deshaun Watson's been playing out of his mind recently. And then they just beat Arizona and Kyler Murray. Dude, think about it. They're one game below 500. They've not had an easy schedule. They're one game below 500. Cam Newton is recovering from a catastrophic injury. He just got back from a catastrophic injury. He's in a new system. Patrick Chung and Hightower didn't play this year because they didn't want to be involved with COVID, right? Because of COVID. Gilmore got hurt for a time. Everyone was bemoaning Brady's lack of weapons last year. They have even fewer for Cam this year. He's got nothing. Cam's got nothing. And they're one game below 500 with three quality wins, two plays away from five quality wins. Two plays, two single plays away from their 5-6, right? 7-4. Two plays away from 7-4 with a tough schedule. And by the way, Cam, look, he was never a guy who's put up big numbers or great numbers. And he never had weapons. This is not new to him. He was his own best running back, and his tight end was his best receiver. He's in the same situation now, minus the tight end. Hey, Cam, what's the feeling, what's that feeling when you win after a string of losses like you suffered this season?
I'd rather have an ugly win rather than a pretty loss, if that makes sense. I don't know if that even exists, but, you know, we didn't play our best game offensively, but, you know, when we needed it, we got the job done, and that's all that counts.
He's right. Cam hasn't been great this year, but he's led. And, again, two plays. It's like so much changes your perception of the season. If he doesn't get stripped against Buffalo, that's one play. If Bobby Wagner doesn't make the play on the goal line when Cam tried to punch it in, they're 7-4 with wins over Miami, the Raiders, Arizona, and then it would be the Bills and the Seahawks. Two plays away from that. As is, they were a game below 500, and I have news for everybody. The AFC East isn't over. And don't tell me about schedule. Oh, they have such a tough schedule. Those five games, their five toughest opponents, well, they lost to the Chiefs. Cam won there, and a call went against them. You really look at their six toughest opponents, and you look and you go, I don't know. They kind of weren't. They were in every game. And they got three wins. Broncos were forced to play without a quarterback, without not just one of their quarterbacks, but any quarterbacks due to COVID. Practice squad receiver Kendall Hinton, who played quarterback for 3 years at Wake Forest before changing positions, was forced into the role. And they were blown out by the Saints. And I've heard a lot of people talk about how they shouldn't have played the game. The league shouldn't have let them play the game. Pfft, to hell with that. If you're going to play football in a pandemic and a COVID outbreak happens on a team, then the reason to postpone a game is simply that there is a contagion possibility, right? This is not safe to play. But as long as that's not the case, why shouldn't they play? Just because they don't have a quarterback? So what? If the quarterbacks were out partying someone got in a car crash, right? And they were all in the same car, and they were laid up in the hospital, and they couldn't play, would they postpone the game? If they were all hurt in practice, better yet, they're all hurt in practice, would they postpone the game? If they had the flu, would they postpone the game? Or something more serious? No, they play the game with who they could play the game with. That's under any circumstances, really. But in this case, the quarterbacks weren't observing safe practices, really. They didn't have their masks on around each other. What was that story about? There were three like hairdressers at a salon, and they had seen something like 150 people over the course of a couple days, and they had COVID. And they tested the people. Of the people they tested, they couldn't find a single COVID case because they were wearing masks. Masks, apparently, are the best way to slow the spread. And if the quarterback is violating protocol, and as a result, like it's even if you just don't have a quarterback just because of whatever reason, you still got to play the game. You want to forfeit the game, fine, but you got to play the game. But that it's a result of a violation of protocol during COVID by players who don't want to bubble up, right? Before the season, they want to rely on their personal responsibility, and then you still want to no. Play with what you got. It's just a football game. You might lose it. You're going to lose it. All right, so you lost. And if it meant that much to you next time, practice better safety measures, right? Like, follow protocol, and you'll have a quarterback. Quarterback's not wearing a mask in the quarterback room, and all the quarterbacks get it. You don't then say, well, now they learned their lesson. Well, it won't be a competitive game. Let's postpone it. What? What? So what? So that the Saints could have a game at the end of the season? What did the Saints do wrong? Vic Fangio, the Broncos head coach, talked about how he felt about his quarterbacks after the game.
Well, I was disappointed on a couple levels in that our quarterbacks put us in this position. Our quarterbacks put the league in that position. We count on them to be the leaders of the team and, you know, leaders of the offense. And those guys made a mistake, and that is disappointing. Obviously, I haven't done a good enough job of selling the protocols to them, you know, when they're on their own. So, you know, part of that could fall on me there.
That coach is right about that. He's right. Look, the fact of the matter is the NFL is a league where you got roughly, when you add the practice squad, call it 100 guys on each team, right? And you have 32 teams. And then you add tag coaches and support staff and this and that. You got, you know, over 3,000 people involved. I don't care how much personal responsibility people exercise. There are going to be some who at times are less than perfect. And that will lead to a spread of a virus, a highly contagious virus, right? It's going to happen. I get it. Coach didn't do a good enough job selling the protocols, even had he done a better job. Maybe a quarterback feels safe among people he associates with. They've all been tested a bunch, right? And he's 6 feet away. He pulls down his mask. No. No. Well, Taysom Hill's 2-0. That's the upshot. Johnny in New York, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Max, good to be with you. I just wanted to talk about this Brady Belichick distinction you've been making.
Yep.
First of all, I just want to say I think it's ridiculous to say who is more responsible. The only way you have the greatest dynasty in the history probably of team sports over 20 years is when you have the greatest quarterback of all time and the greatest coach of all time. But if you do want to go to that debate, it's really hard for me to understand how you can give Belichick credit for crafting a Super Bowl roster year after year, which he did, and then all of a sudden not give him any blame when he has a team that is 5-6. Granted, I've personally, as a Patriots fan, been proud of how they've competed, and I totally agree with you in terms of the Kansas City game and a couple other games that they could be doing a little bit better or have a better record. But I just don't understand how you can say that it's all Belichick.
Okay, let me explain it then. I think that's a legitimate question. First of all, I don't think it's ridiculous at all to say who is it more, right? Like, together, they're the greatest. But who's more responsible? I think it's fine. It's Belichick, pretty clearly. Not only the GM, but also the coach. And Brady is going to be a great quarterback no matter what. He's no way he's going to be the GOAT without Belichick. And if you gave Belichick a couple of different other quarterbacks from that era, they'd have been the GOAT, right? Like, and what's the proof in the pudding? Belichick didn't have Brady one season, won 11 games. Won 10 of them without Brady. They didn't make the playoffs. Okay, they won 11 games. And then, by the way, why is this instructive? Why do you, like, when you look at the details, you see Belichick's looking good right now? Because Belichick wanted to move on from Brady to a younger, cheaper quarterback who he thought could approximate Brady's success. Brady did an end around Belichick and had Garoppolo shipped out of town. Garoppolo then almost never lost. For the Niners, he won and won and won. Then he got hurt. The Niners lost and lost and lost. Then he came back. They were in the Super Bowl, had a double-digit lead in the fourth quarter with Garoppolo, right? Like, that's the guy Belichick wanted. Didn't get him, so he had nothing left. Then he lost his defense before the season, opted out because of COVID, right? And then the offense was no good to begin with, and he didn't have his quarterback. Picks Cam up off the scrap heap, and again, 2 plays away from 7-4. 2 plays. From a guy, and by the way, Cam had COVID this year, coming back off catastrophic injury. Brady, on the other hand, goes to a loaded team. They got an offense. They got a defense. They have weapons. They have a coach. They have an offensive coordinator. Is it the perfect fit? No. No risk it, no biscuit versus dink and dunk. No, it's not the perfect fit, but we knew that going in. Not like that's new. We knew. Okay, so that's the drawback. Does Brady need it perfect? And they're 7-5. I don't know. I find Belichick's 5-6 much more impressive at this moment than Brady's 7-5, given the circumstances. And yes, Cam is partly responsible for that, but it seems to me that when you look at what the Patriots are working with, Belichick deserves the lion's share of the credit, just as he deserved most. It's not that, look, does Tim Duncan deserve a lot of the credit with Popovich? Of course. And by the way, in basketball, it's a player's league. The best players win. In baseball, it's a GM's league, right? Most important person in the franchise, the GM. Football is a head coach's league. The number one thing is the head coach. A great head coach like Mike Tomlin can make a team without a quarterback 8-8. It can be competitive. But, like, yes, of course, Brady was an enormous contributor. I would say a quarterback who won 6 Super Bowls and more Super Bowl MVPs than anyone obviously had a huge thing to, you know, influence on the greatness of that team. News from Max Kellerman Nation. Johnny just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line with a legitimate call. I like that. He had a point to make. Jim in Arizona, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate that. And while I completely respect Cam and that whole thing that took place yesterday in Foxborough, I think besides the questionable play calling of Kingsbury and some of the sloppy play by Kyler, we had that game won. And yeah. It was all about the Cody Parkey disease that seems to have bedridden Zane Gonzalez and the field goal. In fact, Zane can't hit field goals in 2 fourth quarters, even one in his own turf with a dome. That was what was the issue. It's not
You're
so
right.
much that, you know, the Patriots were that great. But I got to tell you, if Zane hit those field goals twice that we've missed those games, we've had those games won.
But let me just say this. And by the way, Arizona is a very good team. You have a lot to be excited about. Excellent young quarterback, an excellent team. You got DeAndre Hopkins for peanuts, and you got rid of a guy you didn't want with a bad contract. You got DeAndre Hopkins back somehow. But let me say this. And by the way, Arizona, here's the main thing about Arizona. If you can keep it close in the playoffs, just imagine you're a fan of the other team that Arizona's playing. It's a one-score game. Kyler Murray has the ball. There's a minute left. It's terrifying because not only is Kyler excellent, but just get the ball in the vicinity of DeAndre Hopkins. He turns a 50-50 ball with 3 guys on him into almost a sure thing. It's terrifying. But in the case of the Patriots, this is Belichick. I brought it up earlier in the show. I brought it up on First Take also. I'll be bringing it up a lot in the coming weeks. Floyd Mayweather used to say, you better not make no mistakes. Because Floyd wasn't perfect, but he made fewer mistakes than the other guy, and he punished you for your mistakes. Belichick is Floyd Mayweather. Belichick's not perfect, but he's going to make fewer mistakes than the other coach. So what you notice about Belichick-coached teams is the other team misses the field goal, right? The other it's not that Belichick creates it. It's that the mistakes made by the other team will be highlighted by the fact that there are fewer made on the Patriots side. Not none, but fewer. It's why when people are trying to now blame Arians, why are you single covering Tyreek Hill? Oh, I see. So Arians is imperfect. It's hard to win with imperfect, right? Oh, that's the way everyone else who ever, you know, who was in the league lived, you know, while Tom Brady was with Belichick. It's an enormous, that's why it goes to the previous caller about why you know, Belichick, Brady, and that. Yeah. Because Brady benefited from having a coach that made fewer mistakes than any other coach. And did Belichick also benefit from the quarterback the same way? Yes, but the coach controls more facets of the game. So is therefore more valuable. And what you'll, you know, like, well, if only Arizona hadn't have missed the field goal. Yeah, that happens a lot against Belichick coached teams. His team doesn't seem to miss those field goals. But by the way, real quick, it may be, like, you look at the Steelers this year, they're usually, you know, the old saying, be better in 2 of the 3 phases. Offense, defense, special teams, win 2 of those matchups, and you're going to win most of the games. Kind of like the Steelers this year, you notice? Special teams is not going well, but the offense and defense are clicking. The defense isn't going as great as you would think, or the offense is sputtering a little bit, but special teams play big. Think of the Titans game early in the season. That's kind of the Patriots. The Patriots are going to get you usually in 2 of the 3 phases of the game. Belichick. Could we be watching Wentz's last game as a starter tonight?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Do the Eagles have any chance to beat Seattle?
They need to start Hurts, because actually the worst thing that could happen for Wentz and the Eagles is they beat Seattle with Wentz.
Best players play. And right now, Carson Wentz remarkably is struggling with confidence.
No question that Carson is on notice.
Put Jalen Hurts in. You showed them that you are giving up on the season. And right now ain't that time.
I'm going to talk about Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. on Last Take in a few. But right now, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, you can reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. All guests join me on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Monday Night Football Preview brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Battle of the Birds. Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf lead the Seahawks into Philly to take on Carson Wentz and a desperate Eagles team looking to stay atop the NFC East. We hope, of course, that Chris Carson has a big game, because I have him in DraftKings. And, you know, I'm winning the league by 10 points now, and that's the main thing you need to be focusing on. Rooting for Chris Carson, yeah. So I can win. What is it? What's the prize in our league, Rob?
Oh, it's a hefty, at least 45, 50 bucks, something like that.
Right.
Maybe a little bit more. I think it's like 50 something. Yeah.
Okay.
You better be careful though. I got that Seahawk defense, and you know how tight they are. They clearly could get me 20 points.
Yeah, you're 20 points off the pace. It's actually not easy. Do you take Chris Carson? Or you take Carlos Hyde? You know, because Carson's just getting back. I still have time to change it, because Hyde's going to be less than Carson.
You do. Sure. You got time.
I don't know. Look, you heard the audio from First Take just now, where I was talking about it. I'll say it again. The worst thing that could happen for the Eagles is that Carson Wentz plays well and wins this game, or does something heroic and wins this game. That's the problem. The regression I saw last year, like, think about this, people. Think about it hard. When Orlovsky or whoever tells me, Max, you're crazy about Wentz. Last year, I saw it as people were saying, is he an MVP? I was like, no, he's not good. He's regressing. I said, look, he's maybe a top 15 quarterback, because he is capable of making great plays, but too many bad decisions. His mechanics were regressing. His decision-making was regressing. His accuracy was regressing. Oh, it's the people around him. It's this, it's that. Okay, maybe that had a snowball effect. Whatever. He wasn't running Peterson's offense, et cetera, et cetera. I noticed it last year, and then it continued this year. I was being told, no, you're crazy. And now, finally, people are like, oh, he's fine. He's not playing well. So let me get this straight. Are people saying that Wentz was doing fine, then all of a sudden forgot how to play? Or was I right when I noticed he's getting a little worse, and here we are, right? And the problem is, instead of people telling him the truth, and the media saying what they saw, which is, yeah, this guy's not good, they chose to focus on what he was doing right, like beating the lowly Giants or the lowly Washington club or the lowly Cowboys. There's a weak division he was beating, and he was beating those teams by a slimmer margin than the Washington backup quarterback was beating those same teams. Then Daniel Jones, a rookie, was beating those same teams. And he was lucky to do it, turn the ball over or like fumble the ball or get stripped or throw an interception in the third quarter. Sorry, on third down in the fourth quarter. Lucky they would recover the ball. And what does he say a couple weeks ago at the post-game presser? This is the way we do things around here. See, that's the problem. I was the only one telling the truth about him last year. Me and one other person. You know who else? Howie Roseman, the GM, who drafted a quarterback in the second round. Now, I totally disagree. With Ryan Clark, with the excellent Ryan Clark. I totally disagree. You're not sending a signal you're giving up on the season. Who cares about... Wait, do you mean to tell me the Eagles think they're going to win a Super Bowl this year? Who cares who gets to the playoffs out of the NFC least? Who cares? They're not going to win a playoff game. That's what... You're giving up on the season? No. They benched McNabb one year. He came back to get him to the NFC championship game. They held him responsible. That's the message you got to send. By the way, also to Carson. You want to help Carson Wentz? Right now, he's his own worst enemy. He thinks he's doing okay. He thinks he can get away with this. Like, look at the reality, everybody. I'm telling you this. And everyone's like, no. But then look what's happening. Now people are saying, will he even be playing next week? If he has a good game, if they somehow beat the Seahawks, if they make the playoffs, mark my words, next year, Carson Wentz won't make it through the season. He'll be done with it. But they lose this game. They bench Wentz. He has to actually do some soul searching. He has to actually work on some stuff for real. Not like, oh, I know I'm not supposed to try to force it, but oh, well, that's the way we do things around here. No, no, no. He works on it for real. Maybe, just maybe. And at this point, I think there's too much wrong with him. But we know the talent was in there somewhere. Maybe, just maybe, he can get back to being an effective quarterback. He's like the league's worst on third down, on the money down. Used to be the best, now he's the worst. Monday Night Football Preview was brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and more at progressive.com. By the way, Russell Wilson, he's the sentimental favorite for MVP, even though he's not leading it now. All Russell's got to do is like, he's not as good as Mahomes. But if he can put up numbers that say, well, he's almost as good as Mahomes, they'll give him MVP. People want to give it to Russell Wilson. I understand why, because if you, like, we do it season by season, the way awards work, right? Well, Russell Wilson, in any one season, wasn't the best. He was the best over the second half of the season. Cam won MVP in 2015. He was the best in the first half here, second half here. He was the third best quarterback this year, second best this year, fourth best this year. But you know what the thing about Russell Wilson is? Every year, those names change. But Russell Wilson's name is there every year. So if you take the last 5 or 6 years, he's the best player in the game. He's been the best player over that period of time. And because he's never been rewarded, he's never gotten an award for that, because there is no award for that. What do you get, a lifetime achievement award? He is the sentimental favorite to win MVP. If he gets his numbers really healthy against the Eagles, he'll get back on track. Because Mahomes' MVPs are going to go out to different players, a lot of different players. They're not going to want to give it to Mahomes every year. No Doubt, by the way, was brought to you, remember No Doubt from way back earlier in the show? By My Computer Career, Training for a Better Life. Did you see Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr.? You see that fight? That exhibition? That was a hell of an exhibition. I'll give you my thoughts on Last Take up next. You know what's not healthy? Stressing about work, or maybe you're out of work. It's time to stop worrying and hit the reset button. You can start a new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months from the comfort of your own home, even if you have zero computer experience. You understand? There's a light at the end of the tunnel. Looking really good on the vaccines. What are you going to do when things get back to normal? There's some sanity at the highest level of our government. What are you going to do as things get back to normal? You're just going to go back to your dead-end job, or do you want to have a career? Because even if you have zero computer experience, you can go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation right now. Live online classes meet just twice a week. And financial aid, including the GI Bill, is available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Last Take up next.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast. You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know I'm First Take. I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Mike Tyson, Roy Jones turned out to be the best version of what that fight might have been. Right? Like, that was the best version of it. Mike Tyson, see, first let's start with this. Roy Jones at his best was the best I've ever seen in my lifetime that I've lived through. He was pound for pound champ for almost 10 years. He was a, like, think about this for a second. Mike Tyson started at junior middleweight in the Olympics. Should have won a gold medal. It was the worst robbery in the history of the Olympics. Korean guy got the decision in Korea. But, like, Jones was beating him so bad, I thought they should have stopped the fight a couple times. Right? Anyway, everyone knew he got a raw deal. Should have been gold medals. He doesn't come close to losing as a pro. At middleweight, wins the title. At super middleweight, gets robbed one fight because he hit a fighter who he had basically knocked out while the fighter was on a knee, Montel Griffin. So they DQ'd Roy. Roy knocked him out in rematching one round. At light heavyweight, cleaned out the division, except for Mikulchevsky, who fought over in Germany and you know, wanted to lure Roy over there so they could rob him again like they robbed him in the Olympics. And then moved up to heavyweight and beat John Ruiz, a top five heavyweight, pretty easily, and opened as a 2-1 favorite to beat Mike Tyson. Think of how great Roy was in his prime. Imagine if I would have told you when Mike Tyson looked invincible, knocking out Michael Spinks in 90 seconds, whatever it was. Hey, there's a junior middleweight who's never going to come close to losing. And one day open as a 2-1 favorite to beat Mike Tyson. But that was Roy. Okay, and now Mike Tyson, we all know the story. But Roy has always based his style on an overwhelming physical advantage in speed and reflexes. He was the quote-unquote boxer in this fight in the sense that he was the guy who was moving around and the other guy was coming to get him. We have a tendency to call the guy who moves around a boxer. But in fact, Mike Tyson, because he was such a short heavyweight with short arms, developed, Customato had a very technical style developed to overcome the disadvantage in height and reach. So in fact, while Roy was considered the quote-unquote boxer, Mike is the better technical fighter. And it was showing early on, not just the size and strength, but the technique was showing early on. And he was catching Roy with some Mike Tyson hooks, and Roy took him very well. After about 4 rounds, I look in the corner, I see Roy huffing and puffing, looks exhausted. Mike's body shots were taking a toll, and I thought, damn, Roy's kind of being run over. And I could see the look in Roy's face, like, I'm not going out like this. And the second half of the fight was competitive. Roy made it competitive. Tyson won, and they called it a draw. Vinny Pazienza had a weird card, but because Vinny was one of the Pazienza, former champion, was one of the ringside judges. But at any rate, Roy made it a competitive, entertaining fight when he just refused to get, like, he like had a moment where he said, no, I'm going to impose my will here. I'm not going to let Tyson run me over. That was an entertaining 8-round, two-minute rounds, but 8-round fight. And by the way, Mike Tyson, if he wants to keep doing this, he should. They should match him right, not against huge guys, not against young guys, but against older, smaller guys like Roy. They should match Mike Tyson. Who doesn't want to see Mike Tyson fight? By the way, you see Mike after the fight, he's like, everyone's worried about Roy. Roy fought 3 years ago. Because I haven't fought in 15 years. Why doesn't anyone care about me? Mike, we love you. But the sense is usually that the other guy is in trouble when Mike Tyson fights. He just left that impression on audiences in the 80s and 90s.
Is there anybody you want to see Mike go up against? Let's say, I know you said you want to see him get back in the ring if properly matched, but anybody come to mind? Or?
Everyone's going to say Holyfield. I don't think Mike got no wins against Evander, ever. Bad ever. Matchup for Mike. The thing about Holyfield is you are not ever blowing Holyfield. The only dude who ever really smoked Holyfield was James Toney. James Toney boxed he boxed Holyfield's brakes off, right? Mm. Like, and stopped them. That's the only time someone had an easy time with Holyfield. Also, bad styles matchup. But also a middleweight, by the way, who'd moved up to heavyweight. But and then Holyfield was knocked out by Riddick Bowe, but it was a hell of a fight. And the first two fights, they split. No, Holyfield's going to find out about you. You're not just going to knock Holyfield out. And so once it gets past the early rounds where Tyson's like coming at, now all of a sudden it becomes who wants it more, who takes a better punch, you know, who's a little bit more diverse in their attack, and that's Holyfield. It's just a bad matchup for Tyson. No, I don't want to see Holyfield. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that, Raj. You have to be creative. But a small, old heavyweight, let's put it that way, a small old guy, not a big young guy. Like when people early on were saying, what about Tyson? Can he fight Tyson Fury? I'm like, are you people insane? Mike Tyson's 54, hadn't fought in 15 years, quit on his stool against a mediocre fighter when he last fought, had a long, brutal career. And then Tyson Fury's in his prime, a foot taller than Mike, 50 pounds heavier, dances like a lightweight. In Tyson's prime, that would have been a tough fight. All eyes on Wentz tonight versus the Seahawks. Max Kellerman Show.
Thanks for listening to the Max Kellerman Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.